Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. As we celebrate the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage, which assured women the right to vote, we're also taking a look into the lives of influential women in South Dakota, women who stood on the shoulders of those suffrage giants and have changed the way we live today and in the future. Jose Marie Griffiths is the president of Dakota State University in Madison, and she joins us on the phone now. Dr. Griffiths, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Lori.
I want to start with this connection between suffrage and science, because as I learn more about the fight for the right to vote, it's evident how hard it wasn't something that people just sat back and allowed to come to them. They had to really take some drastic actions to receive suffrage in America. And in science, for women, often their efforts are not even recognized in the world. Talk a little bit about why thinking about women in science matters to you, because this is an area of your interest as well.
Yes, definitely an area of interest and a lifelong passion. But ever since I actually read about Marie Curie and the work that she did and how she was not recognized for so much of her career, and then reading about other female scientists who also played major roles in some of the biggest discoveries in science, and that their role was sort of was relegated to a second level. I think women have had a very, very hard time being recognized in the scientific community. First of all, there are very few women who have gone into science, although in recent years we've seen more women going into science. Unfortunately, not too many in my science of physics. But I think we continue to see women working and trying to get recognition, and it's still a struggle. I mean, even presidents of universities, I think only 25% of university presidents are actually female in this day and age. So I think having women go into science, but then have them flourish and move to the top ranks of science becomes very, very important.
Yeah. You yourself have received more than 20 significant scientific awards in science, technology, teaching, and the advancement of women in these fields. But I want to go back a little bit to when you first fall in love with science or the world or technology. Like, what, when you look at your path today, what were some of those early experiences that you can say now, yeah, that's how I got here?
Well, yeah, a number of them. First of all, my father was a math teacher, and so I sort of grew up at his side as he was grading papers. And so for me, math was relatively easy. But I fell in love with the idea of being a research scientist, not only by reading the biography of Marie Curie and the work that she'd done, but for me, the idea of discovering something that nobody else knew was a big driver for me, big ambition for me. I mean, I used to, when I was doing math, I used to think, well, maybe I can come up with a theorem. I never did come up with a theorem, but so I was pushed to into scientific research, and I think my soul is that of a research scientist. I'm still looking at the world as scientists. We observe what's going on. We gather data to see if we can make predictions or if we can prove or disprove a hypothesis, is the way it works, and then find something that other people are unaware of and then publish and put that out into the public domain so people can comment on it. I still am driven by that. Let's do something a little bit different. It's the way I see the world. It's who I am at the core.
Has there been pushback for that? Not everybody likes perpetual change. Not everybody likes to be pushed to innovate or to advance. Let's talk about what that's been like for you in your career. Do you come up against people who are like, nah, slow down?
Oh, absolutely. and it's why people, used to tell me that I couldn't do things. You know, it would change. Things have always been done this way. And so I always would try and think about, well, why do we have to do it that way? Are there better ways to do things? And what's the evidence for a better way to do things? And, you know, I can be pretty patient, but I can also multitask. So I'm persistent with what I'm trying to do, but I can go and work on something else for a while and then wait for people to come around to some of the ideas that I want to have. But it's very, very important in any kind of leadership role that you develop the support of people who are actually going to be affected by change. So it's not really a single person marching in and making change. It has to be a collective effort. And so a lot of time is spent communicating ideas, listening to the ideas of others, putting them into some kind of framework. I tend to think in terms of frameworks rather than individual actions. But once you have an idea of where we're trying to go, then you can usually match various people's interests and capabilities into helping us move forward so that collectively we move forward further and faster than any one of us could have done alone. I think that's a key to successful leadership.
Who do you look up to from a leadership or a scientific standpoint? Who have been, you mentioned Marie Curie, who else is on your list of people that you go back to and you say, I like that. I mean, that inspires me still.
Oh, yes. Yes. Lisa Meitner, physicist, who's not always recognized, was lately recognized for her work. I think a number of the women that I've met through my work on the National Science Board. So we've just seen France Cordova just step down as the director of the National Science Foundation. She was the chief scientist at NASA. A good friend of mine, Kathy Sullivan, the first American woman to walk in space, went up on 3 shuttle rides and has just recently been the first woman to touch the floor of the ocean. So from the depths of the deep to the stars in the sky, she's really explored that whole universe. So it's not just women in history that I admire, but women that I see forging ahead, being strong to their scientific roots, and working collectively to help mentor and encourage other young women and minorities, underrepresented minorities, to engage in the scientific world.
Tell people why that matters, why the diversity and the inclusion of different worldviews, different voices, different backgrounds, different genders, what can that mean for scientific progress?
Thank you for that question. It's very, very important. I mean, we are a diverse world, and we want to have different ideas and different perspectives. And we have to remember that everybody comes to their education and comes to their career with a perspective that's based on their own experience. And having new ideas and new ways of looking at things is, in fact, the way to make progress. Otherwise, we would only ever make incremental progress. We'd never see grand leaps. And so bringing in more voices, more thoughts, and more ideas becomes very, very important. And that means you can't start looking and building a scientific community in higher education. You have to go back to the K-12 system and encourage young people to develop. Actually, we're born with that sense of wonder, I think, when we're in kindergarten and the early grade school, and somehow that's lost by the time young people tend to come through middle school. So how do we inject that idea of trying things out, not being afraid to fail, just trying to understand the world around us, seeing what we can build, seeing what we can touch and make different. There's that whole world of wonder, in a way, that we need to encourage and engender, along with an ability to look at failure, not as a failure, but as another learning opportunity to say, oh, well, that didn't work. Let me try something else. So I think diversity is very, very important, and in science and in other areas, in business too. I mean, it's very, very important. The world would be very, very boring if we all thought alike, if we all knew what the way forward was. We wouldn't need to communicate with each other because we'd know what we're all thinking and we'd all have the same idea. And that's just not what the future is going to want. And we're even finding that among employers. Employers are now saying, we don't want people to come out with the cookie cutter approach to solving a problem. We want people who can think independently, who can think differently, who can do some out-of-the-box thinking. We want people who can think collaboratively so that we bring the best of the ideas forward and feel comfortable doing that. So I think our approach to education, K through 12, and then on into higher education, is to incorporate much more diversity in all aspects.
Can that kind of thinking be taught? Is it about unlearning things that we've kind of incorporated in the way we learn that we're like, oh, we need to unlearn that? Can we learn? Can you train a scientific brain to think, more innovatively, more openly? Is it natural? I guess, are scientists made or born?
Well, that's another interesting question. I think both. I don't think you can sit there and say, read this book, and suddenly you'll be a different kind of thinker. And I don't think you can lecture people or talk to a class and say, this is it. I really think you have to let people do things and try things and develop a level of confidence that it's okay to try things, and that even if it doesn't work out, you have learned something from that, and how you then put that into the next thing you do. I think we have a level of fear of failure in young people that they sort of expect us to succeed in everything. And that's why sort of sports is very good, because in sports you can't win everything all the time unless you're a superstar. You know, maybe LeBron James could win everything all the time. But you really have to learn to accept defeat as well as success. And in that sense, I think showing people, giving young people opportunities to discover, giving young people opportunities to work with others and see what they've discovered, to have people present what they've discovered, even at an early age, is, I think, an excellent way of getting people to feel comfortable in that sort of scientific mindset.
We're doing a lot of thinking and talking about suffragettes and suffragists in here in America this summer. But we're inviting people like you on as part of this conversation that the history is being made right now. And when you think back to the past and the people who have paved the way for you to be the person, the leader, the scientist that you are today, what do you hope people will look back on 2020? Maybe not the pandemic, but maybe, and say these are the women who push things forward. Like, what are you optimistic that 100 years from now we will look back and celebrate?
Oh, I'm hoping we'll celebrate our resourcefulness and resilience. And I'm hoping, I tend to be an optimist. I think that, you know, obviously we're going to meet challenges and problems, but together we can begin to overcome most of them. And I'm hoping that 100 years from now, people will say, oh my gosh, what must it have been like to think back then 200 years? Actually, it's fascinating to think it's only been 100 years of women's suffrage. And you know, what that has meant for women generally, and it's still taking a long time to see women in an equal footing in terms of their roles in many, many aspects of society. Female politicians, there are only so many of them. Of course, we have a female governor in this state, which I think is excellent. We have more female scientists being recognized. We have more female authors being published. I think what I'm hoping people will see is that the opportunities given are the opportunities that have been seized and led to progress and led to good outcomes. That's the optimism in me, that we're here to try and make this a better place for ourselves and for others, and to bring others along with us. That's why it's sort of the land of opportunity for people wanting to come to this country, wanting to have that opportunity to be free, to explore, to learn, to try things out, to build things, whether it's a business or whether it's a building. We want to be able to show that we've actually contributed to this world in a positive way.
Hmm. Are there things that you're looking forward to in this next year as we transition through, you know, different ways of developing education virtually because of the pandemic? What do you hope that we're learning today in 2020 that's going to help us even in 2021? Are there things that are rising to the occasion right now that you say, yeah, that's going to be a lesson that we're going to be able to capitalize on right away?
Yes, I think we've already learned some things since the start of the pandemic, particularly that, you know, technology can be very helpful. But technology can also be somewhat isolating if you don't pay attention to human interaction. I think that building community and the importance of family and the importance of community and the importance of connection can be facilitated through technology, but it's still not quite the same. I mean, you can do a fair amount, and I think as people have been either quarantined at home or under lockdown orders or under work from home situations or school from home situations, that they realize and value the relationships they have both with the people who are at home with them, but then also with friends and colleagues that they may have taken for granted in the past. I think those opportunities in the workplace for informal gatherings, bumping into people as you're walking from one building to another or going to get a cup of coffee, are really, really valuable in the overall day-to-day experience that we have. And I'm hoping that we'll never take interpersonal relationships for granted, even though technology is helping us in new and interesting ways. And I'll give you an example. People are engaging in online meetings. And I'm in the morning till night sometimes, and they're very, very good, but they're also tiring. And I also realize I'm not quite getting the visual cues I usually get when I'm in the same room as someone. So I've already learned that I can get a certain way with an electronic meeting, but it's qualitatively different when I'm in the same room with someone. And I'm hoping that as we develop technologies going forward, we'll be more mindful of the need to support the human aspects of our lives and not just the sort of task-oriented aspects of our lives.
Jose Marie Griffiths is president of Dakota State University in Madison, South Dakota. President Griffiths, thank you so much for being here with us today and being part of this project. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being invited.